surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago sports spoken here. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
720 WGN 407. Hope you're having a great Sunday. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Adam Hoag. Pleased to bring in, from your Chicago Tribune, the lead columnist, a man who I almost went to blows with on TV on Friday. David Haugh is joining us right now. Hi, David.
Well, thanks. Hey, Carm. Hey, how are you doing? I'm glad you got out of bed Saturday morning after that Bulls loss. I know it had to be a tough one for you.
It was tough in the first quarter. It was tough in the third quarter. Saturday morning wasn't great. I'm moving on, and so are the Celtics, clearly.
And it was tough for your pregame because you tried to land some blows in that argument, and it just didn't register.
I will acknowledge
it
that
really it just didn't register, Carm.
It wasn't my strongest. I was reaching a ton. I didn't feel secure. I've had my moments defending the team where I felt like I really took them right to task.
Well, now I feel bad because I just kept the beat down yesterday on the show. Well, so you must be struggling today.
I was kind of getting going. Jimmy in the knee. Anyway, moving on.
Anyway.
Let's talk about your piece in the Tribune today is phenomenal on the Bears draft and what Ryan Pace is doing. People should read it. It's excellent as always. What do you think's going on with Ryan Pace and John Fox right now, David? What would you say?
Well, specifically with Pace and Fox, I think that a lot of it is we're assuming a lot because they're never going to really, you know, be upfront about the real dynamic. So I guess to kind of try to interpret what's going on, I would think that they seem to be, you know, on different reading off different scripts, and certainly as I think I put it this morning. You know, I don't think that their watches are synchronized for winning because you have a general manager who clearly drafted this weekend for 2018 and beyond. And you've got a coach that has to win in 2017. You know, I think that, you know, as if put also, I think one day, you know, the next Bears coach might love this draft, but John Fox hates it because, and that's, I'm presuming he hates it because you really got only one player out of five that is probably, you know, reasonably going to be in a position to make a significant contribution, and I think that's Eddie Jackson, the safety. The others might, but they're gambles. They're developmental players, and I think that they might be terrific NFL players at one point, but you're coming off a three-win season. You've got 9 wins in 2 years. For a 62-year-old coach, I would have wanted more immediate answers than the ones my general manager provided.
Yeah, David, I keep going back to the week, kind of the crazy week, where Ryan Pace and John Fox were hired. When Ryan Pace was hired, John Fox was coaching a different team that was preparing for a playoff game that most of the country thought he was going to win. So even if there was talk that Fox could become available, if that was going on, you know, behind the scenes in league circles, no one really thought he was going to be available 3 days later. So you can't imagine that Fox was really on Ryan Pace's short list when he takes the job, right? So, and then things unfold the way they do, and publicly it certainly seemed like John Fox was the most qualified coach available. But I think what you bring up is key, this idea that, I think it's really been from day one, as we look back on it, Ryan Pace had more of a long-term view of how he was going to fix what was a horribly flawed roster that was left for him, but he had a coach that was just about to turn 60 when he was hired that, you know, was trying to win his first Super Bowl.
It was an arranged marriage. I don't think there's any question about that. And I think that they've done a nice job of getting on the same page and trying to, you know, present a united front. And I think to a large degree, they've done that pretty successfully. You haven't seen the friction, at least outwardly, that you see often in pro sports. And you've seen, you know, some concessions made on both sides, I believe. But you get into the year three phase where you've got to start to see from a coaching standpoint some signs of progress traditionally, or else, you know, you get to those contractual realities. And, you know, John Fox, is he going to enter the fourth year of his contract without an extension? And is he going to be a lame duck? And it's going to be inevitable. So that third year with a four-year contract, you reach a point where you've got to make a commitment or cut bait. And I think that Ryan Pace has a lot more job security than John Fox, and I think this weekend reflected that. And I don't think it's any surprise. You've got the NFL's youngest general manager and a guy in his third stop who is, you know, basically happy to land in Chicago, and they're paying him well. So it's not a great fit from that standpoint. You got two guys at opposite ends of the spectrum who have done the best they can to work together and to do the best they can to kind of, you know, merge their philosophies. But what happened this weekend is just, you know, exposed the fact that they are clearly going in opposite directions. Because I liked, you know, and I'm on record, I liked the first pick in terms of what it represented in the way of, you know, being aggressive and creative and different. But Brian Pace lost me after that. I mean, I think that you got too cute. And I think that, you know, they may end up being great players, but I think that there's way too much risk involved.
Okay, so do you have confidence then that Ryan Pace, do you think he's the right guy for the job?
Well, I think he can be. I guess I'm hedging a little bit, Carm. I think that I left Hallis Hall on Thursday night thinking, that was a very interesting day. You know, I didn't expect that. I didn't think he had it in him. I'm a little less certain of that after yesterday. I think that the Bears are can't get it right, you know. Even if Pace is the right guy, I mean, he's got the wrong coach to be the right guy, if you know what I mean. So, and if he's the right coach, then he got the wrong GM. I mean, they can have a hard time getting things to click simultaneously. And I think that Ryan Pace, after Friday and Saturday, kind of lapsed into the trap that a lot of guys do, and Phil Emery did. And when you're trying really hard, so hard to prove that you're the smartest guy in the room, you're usually wrong. And I think that he just tried too hard to say, hey, I can find this guy at Division II school, and I can find this guy at a, you know, Division I AA school, and look at my great scouts. You know what? Hey, pick the major college guy with experience. What do you have against him?
You know, we had this argument on TV on Friday, or at least off air. Someone, I was saying, like, the guy reeks of someone who's trying to be the smartest guy in the room. What is if you're George McCaskey, David? You know that there's friction between the two. Why wouldn't you go in there and say, hey, Ryan, if you really trust Ryan Pace, just say, hey, man, if you want to get, you want John out of here, you want somebody that you're more aligned with, make the move. Why wouldn't you do that?
Well, I think there's some financial reasons why you wouldn't.
They're rich. They're rich. They got so much.
I know. I know. And there's also the reality of, okay, you mentioned George McCaskey. He's a chairman that has been the chairman since, I think, 2011. And in those 6 years, he's in his sixth year, he's presided over, I think, four different general manager coach combinations. That's not continuity. That's actually the opposite of continuity. That's organizational chaos. And you have a guy who's responsible for that. He doesn't want to necessarily create another job search, start over again. He wants to believe what he wants to believe. And I think that you can fool yourself into thinking things are true. Look, this is a guy, and I respect George. You know, I like him, and you know, we have a pretty good relationship. But this is a guy that told me, you know, at the postseason press conference that fans were on his side, and there wasn't, you know, an anger element developing in the fan base, or an apathetic element developing. The people in the South Lot are so enthusiastic about the Bears to come follow him around for the Week 1 opener. Well, I'm going to do that, and I guarantee you, there's not going to be that we're happy to be here mentality, because, you know, the natives are restless. And the ones who aren't restless aren't paying attention. They're asleep. So the Bears have a real dilemma here. I think that Mitch Trubisky kind of created a little bit of a buzz. And I think the next 2 days that followed kind of undid the goodwill that was created by picking the guy who excited some people. So I don't know where the Bears stand right now. It just feels very familiar.
Yeah, it does. And I guess the one thing I would maybe take exception to is I always felt like Phil Emery was the guy who thought he was the smartest guy in the room. I don't necessarily get that sense from Ryan Pace. And the one thing I would say, too, is I think that this, and maybe you disagree, David, but I think the way this draft unfolded actually did point to a guy who maybe is actually drafting the best player available on their specific draft board. Let me say that. We might disagree with how the board looks, but because otherwise, how do they not draft more defensive players? They did not draft for need at all. They addressed two positions they got last year in Cody Whitehair and Jordan Howard, again, despite the fact that they only had five picks. So that tells me maybe as a group they're overthinking this with the D2 guys and the FCS guys, but it still tells me that they're actually sticking to the philosophy that they believe in.
That's valid, and I don't want to. I don't want. You know, it sounds like I'm picking on Ryan Pace. Ryan Pace doesn't strike me as that kind of guy I described either, from a personality standpoint. You know, he's quite the opposite. Actually, I think he's approachable. He's very down to earth. I mean, he's the kind of guy you can have a beer with. I mean, he's definitely not similar in personality to Phil Emery, who I think did give off a vibe. That did, like, you know, I'm smart, I'm intelligent, I'm a scout, just ask me how smart I am and I'll tell you. Yeah. You know, how do you know that I'm intelligent? Well, I'm going to tell you. You don't get that from Pace at all. You get humility, you get you know, empathy, and you get a guy that's considerate, I think, of the people around him. That said, Adam, what I guess I was referring to was the picks that he made. I mean, he kind of, you know, strained a muscle reaching for them. They were very unorthodox. And, you know, I don't think that you want to have – you can have one unorthodox move in a draft, and he did. I don't think you want 4 out of 5. And I think that's what I mean in terms of, you know, that's kind of maybe a cliche, a guy who tries to show that he's the smartest guy in the room. I just think that Ryan Pace maybe tried a little too hard to be creative, to be – you know, different. You know, take the gimme. I just don't know that. It's like the Blackhawks on the power play. You know, you don't have to tell me how skilled you are and how good you can do this. Just score. And I don't know that the Bears took advantage of some of those opportunities because, you know, they did trade back in the second round to get their great tight end, you know, Gronk Jr. out of Ashland. And there were safeties on the table that I think they could have really used. But I don't know. You know, you're right. He did go for the best player available on the board. You have to respect that. And it's too early to judge a draft in its entirety. But we all have opinions.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, we do. Last thing for you. Does the way the whole Mike Glennon thing, I guess, go, the way that went down, does that rub you the wrong way at all? Or is that just a GM doing business the hard way in the NFL? Because, I mean, well, you can't.
Does it rub you the wrong way? You guys the wrong way?
Doesn't make any sense to me. I wouldn't pay $18.5 million to a guy if I knew I was going to try to draft my quarterback.
That's a different question, right, okay. Adam? I mean, you're asking, does it bother me that they brought in Mike Glennon and made some assurance to him maybe that they weren't going to draft a quarterback and then they did?
I mean, I guess if they flat out told him, hey, we're not planning on drafting a quarterback at number 3, which, yeah, I'm guessing they didn't say. I mean, I'm guessing, right, they did not guarantee that. If that actually went down, then it does rub me the wrong way. Otherwise, I guess I kind of look at it like, hey, look what the Eagles did last year. They had Sam Bradford. They traded up to number 2. They were paying Chase Daniel a bunch of money, too, and it all worked out for them.
There's a lot of conversation about this. I haven't read about it yet, but I think I might because there's so much, you know, difference of opinion. Look, this is the way I feel about it. Mike Glennon is guaranteed $18 million from the Bears, and that's it. That's all he's guaranteed. He's Mike Glennon. You know, he's 27 years old. 27, isn't he? And he really hasn't accomplished that much in the NFL. If the Bears told him that they weren't going to draft a quarterback, shame on them. But if he believed it, shame on him. He's a professional. I don't have any sympathy for him. If people want to, you know, create some because he was promised this or promised that, there are no promises in pro sports. It's competition. If you're that good where you can't be challenged, go prove it. You're going to have an opportunity to start. I know that there's going to be pressure to play the first-round pick in Trubisky. You're still going to have a year to do it. You're right. The Eagles comparison is a good one. But it's not like you're bringing in a guy that's coming on, who's been to 3 Pro Bowls and, you know, has proven a lot in the NFL. Mike Glennon, they overpaid for him. They may have overpaid for Trubisky, too. But I don't feel bad because he's here under false pretenses, because if he believed those, then he's naive. And if the Bears, you know, the Bears want to draft a quarterback to challenge him, and he's a better player, then Mike Glennon should be a backup, a highly paid backup, but a backup.
David Hoff from the Chicago Tribune. Mike Glennon was a third-round pick. Mike Glennon hasn't started a game since 2014. Mike Glennon's got $18.5 million. I'm not feeling a bit sorry for Mike Glennon. I don't care how that went down. Was it business is business.
Plus, Carm, he got to sing at Wrigley Field.
That's exactly right.
You know? I mean, they booed him.
They booed him, but he did get to sing it. Hey, before you go, Jimmy Butler a Bull next year?
He probably will be, Carm, because the Bulls won't have the nerve to trade him like they should.
If you're the Celtics, if you're Boston, would you trade your perhaps top three pick, Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder, for Jimmy Butler? Because I wouldn't. I think Avery Bradley is going to be
as well as the Celtics are played today, and as well as they may play in these playoffs. I don't know if you can answer that now. But if you had to answer that now, I'd say no.
Right.
And they've got that little gimmicky, let's throw the ball into the paint and be 4 feet away from the basket and throw it back out behind the three-point arc and let's celebrate the three-pointer. I mean, they've got that style down. That's working for them. So maybe the Jimmy Butler scenario is better for Boston if they get ousted in this series, which it doesn't look like the Wizards are going to be able to do after today, but who knows? It's a long series and the context could change. But if I'm Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge right now, I don't need Jimmy Butler.
All right, I got one more for you NBA-wise. If LeBron wins it this year and the whole world is writing that LeBron's better than Michael, will you be on the wall for me and point out that that is absolutely not the case? Because I'm going to need allies here, and I'm not going to be able to handle it if that goes down.
I think we might agree on that one, Carm, and we would not come to blows, and we would actually have a very nice little moment there. I would think that'd still go with Jordan. And as long as you promise not to wear the 23 jersey, I think I'd agree with you.
Okay. I won't wear the jersey. Okay. I need allies right now. It's making me sick.
I know you do. I know. I'm feeling for you. I threw you a lifeline there before we said goodbye.
Thank you.
Good show. Keep it up. Good talking with you, Adam.
Thanks David.
David
Hoss,
see you guys.
Chicago Tribune.